Tuesday, October 16, 2019. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson, and I am not with my better half, Eric Rosenthal, although I will see him in just a couple hours at day two of G2E. This week's going to be interesting. This episode is going to be some audio that Eric and I recorded with Mark Duvall from You Can Bet on That prior to the summit. We recorded in Eric's room over at the D. That will be followed by my interview with Jonathan Jossel that we recorded at Oscars here at the Plaza. Later today, tomorrow, whenever I get a chance to put it out, I'll have audio featuring Chris Christie's keynote at G2E, Scott Stratton's keynote at G2E, Chris Christie's media availability, so some questions that we were able to ask him specifically as media in a separate event after his keynote, and then possibly audio from a couple panel discussions that I attended that I thought were really interesting and ones that I'll publish some highlights that I think casino patrons would appreciate. So that is what's on the near horizon over for the next few days. I know last week was a little bit of a drought. Appreciate everybody's patience. Hopefully making up for it this week. So here is our discussion with Mark Duvall from You Can Bet on That, followed by my interview with Jonathan Jossel, CEO of The Plaza. Enjoy.
All right, so this is the first time that, Eric, I think this is the first time you and I have ever recorded in person.
That's correct.
That's impressive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Everything has been over Zencastr, which I will never use again.
Now, when you had the trouble with your microphone this last time, was that Zencastr?
That was Zencastr.
It wasn't your mic.
No, So I don't know what happened.
All right.
All I know is I did the sound checks. Everything sounded the way that I thought it should, and it did. And then I go to edit, and I hear that at 10 minutes and 15 seconds in, it just switches
just
microphones.
Suddenly, yep.
So that'll be that's the last time that I'm going to be using Zencastr. But here with my fancy little rig. Directly in front of me, Eric Rosenthal. To my right, Mark Duvall from the You Can Bet on That podcast.
Yep.
Some people have heard of that.
Yes.
We'll give you a shout out here. Maybe you get some new listeners.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We are in Eric's room at the D. The D is it's fun to say every time.
I have to think before I mention it every time. Yeah. It never sounds good.
Yeah, you can never show appreciation for the D without sounding without feeling a little
awkward.
You going
to the D?
No. Yeah. There's been. And on our show and even on VC, I'm starting to like the D.
It's true. It's difficult because, you know, I'm seeing a much better treatment here, and I really want to tell the world about how great they can be here, but anytime I try to show appreciation, I haven't found language that works for me. So I'm just going to say thank you to Mike Malucci, my host, and to Derek and to the good people over at Circus Sports. They've been fantastic. And I enjoy my stay here. I might have to go by the address. Anybody know the address here?
Just call it Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald.
The new Fitzgerald.
I'm not sure what it's called now.
I'm a huge fan of the new Fitzgeralds, and I love the new Fitzgeralds. That's going to be a different kind of euphemism now, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You go to the new Fitzgeralds? No.
I don't know if you can ask if someone's into the new Fitzgerald. It's a politically correct world here.
You know what they say about Rosenthal? He loves the new Fitzgerald.
Ew.
I'm down at the Plaza to continue the conversation on this whole process. So, the situation I have at the Plaza is what's called a back-end comp, right? Where they are waiting to assess my play before awarding a comp,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So So I paid for the room when I checked in. They would just refund on that card then on the back end on whatever they find appropriate, or
pretty much.
Okay, very good. What are you looking forward to getting into? Sport? You gonna get some sports action down?
I'm gonna get some sports action down. I'm gonna play some craps. I'm gonna play some blackjack. They have a good free bet blackjack game here. At the new Fitzgeralds, and
at the new Fitzgeralds,
yeah, and they've got a nice double deck game in High Limit.
Yeah,
so maybe a little Bach. We'll see.
Yeah. Mark, you and Dr. Mike drove in.
Yes.
Who drives?
So I drive Mike's car. He's got a big Suburban. It's just
you drive Mike.
I drive Mike's car. Gotcha. Yeah. Even when we go to the casino each week, I drive Mike's car. Yeah. So and then he just is on his phone and checking the scores and things like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you? You've been. How long have you lived in San Diego now?
Well, I mean, virtually my whole life. I was born in Inglewood, which is near Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And
Inglewood.
Yeah.
Always up to no good. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's
always up to no good.
Always. Yeah. Then we moved to San Diego when I was 3 years
sure.
old. So.
Yeah. You've been in Southern California your whole life.
Yes.
So this is a trip that you've made countless times.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Driven many times.
Do you still get excited? Do you still find that? Do you still get that anticipation as you are approaching Las Vegas?
You know what? I guess I'll have to say no, only because there are casinos close to us now. When in the olden days, when there weren't full-blown casinos in the San Diego area, Vegas was really all we had. So we would get more excited then.
Yeah,
we still get excited. I mean, we were all excited today. Mike was, you know, had to work till like 2 o'clock, and he texted me at like 1 o'clock saying, "Oh my God, this last hour is going to be hell."
Yeah.
So, because you know, we are excited to come. So maybe it's not quite as special as it used to be, but yeah, still a little bit.
I'm gonna fanboy on you can bet on that real quick. I know in the earlier episodes, you guys were reminiscing on the early days of you and him coming out to Vegas, and you guys were talking about how you would like hypothesize on how you're gonna like, okay, I think this trip, I think I'm gonna play inside numbers. Mm-hmm, and like, do you still do that? Do you still chat about strategies and approaches, or have you done it? Are you guys so set in your ways that it's just like, we know.
Mike still does, okay. Especially after a big loss. Say, yeah, you know, Mark, I think this time this is what I'm gonna do. And I just kind of, because when we get there, then he bets exactly the same as he always has.
Yeah.
But now we still do talk about it, yeah.
Does Dr. Mike get away, like, if, not when you guys go to the casino on the weekly basis you do, but when you come out here to these events and stuff like that,
yeah.
In the 100% of his gambling time, what percentage is craps and what percentage is all other games?
It really might be about 99%.
Wow.
If he sits and plays a blackjack hand, it's probably to kill time because the craps table hasn't opened yet.
Right.
Or, you know, we're waiting on somebody to, you know, or we're meeting up with somebody. Maybe he'll make a couple of sports bets. But no, it's pretty much all craps. You know, for me, maybe it's 90%. I'll play a little bit more. Like when we were at Gamblapalooza and I sat and played some Pai Gow poker, right?
Sure.
He won't be able to do that for as long. He'll be itching to get back to the tables,
Eric, when Circa had its no juice promotion, you came out and took advantage of that, and then you talked extensively about it on the following pod.
That was a great episode, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Eric did it all, brought all the content, and I made it sound as pretty as I could. I imagine the room that we're in and the arrangements you have are fruits of that experience still.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you were actually. I think you were very blatant about the action that you put down that weekend. I think you were.
I
shared details. I don't know if I was blatant.
But I mean, okay. I shared more.
You shared some real numbers.
Yeah. You use numbers when you don't normally do. But for the sake of that,
we didn't talk units. We talked dollars.
Right. Exactly. So coming into a weekend like this, what expectations do you feel like they have?
They knew that was okay. Yeah, no, they don't. They're not expecting that type of action. I'm going to give them regular casino play. They're good with that. That's not an issue.
We know there's a full slate of football, both college and NFL, but we are in the we're hitting some fun times of October baseball.
Yeah. By the way, thank you to Taylor from New Mexico, as well as I think it was Terry Dean. They wanted to make sure that we knew that on the West Coast, those 12 o'clock games are actually 9 a.m. games.
Sure.
So, you know, we could get down early, but, you know, I've got the Circa app loaded and ready to go, so I don't even have to get out of bed for that.
I actually kind of appreciated the reminder because I don't bet a whole lot of college football, so it probably wouldn't have impacted me so much. But it was a nice reminder that if I do like a 12 o'clock, what would normally be a 12 o'clock game, to make sure I get my wager in time. But like you said, I don't have to run down to the sports book to do that anymore. I can open up my app and get busy on the betting.
You got to load it though. You haven't been here in a while. Is your app loaded and ready to go?
Tomorrow, I need to take care of that tomorrow. So
the wake up by certain time. Oh, I guess tomorrow's Friday.
Yeah.
I got time.
Right. Yeah. We're going into the summit, Mark. What's one or two things on the agenda for the summit that you and or Dr. Mike are looking forward to?
I think really it's tomorrow, the Craps meetup that you guys have set up. Looking forward to that, and then just seeing everybody at that initial kind of cocktail get together. Because there are, we've talked about it on the show. This is the first summit since Al from San Diego passed away. And Al was such a great guy, and I the only time we saw him was usually at the summit or at VIMF, and I didn't realize till he was gone how often I would listen to 500 by Midnight and think, I wonder what Al's going to have to say about that. And Al was a big Star Wars fan, as well as I am, and he didn't like the last Star Wars movie, right? So I wanted to talk to him about that, and I never will get the chance. So anyway, that's going to be a big part of all of us reminiscing about Al, but still a lot of people that I haven't seen in 2 years since that's the last time there was a summit. So really those two things, not counting the main event, are the two things tomorrow I'm really looking forward to, is everybody getting together at Golden Gate.
How long are you guys here?
We're here only till Sunday morning, and we'll probably take off relatively early Sunday morning to avoid the traffic, because if you wait too long, the traffic getting into Southern California is just really bad. So
yeah.
Chris Kim leaves at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I believe it, because then it's just a straight shot. Yeah. My sister left Vegas a few months ago at about 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and something happened at the Cajon Pass. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but it's a big downhill stretch, and there was some accident, and it took him like 11 hours to get home. Sunday, so that's terrible. It should be closer to 5.
So if there's no traffic, how long does it take?
If there's no traffic, really to San Diego, the heart of San Diego, 5 hours if you're going at a pretty good clip. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you could do it in under that if you're going a little faster. But yeah.
When I lived in Sacramento and then made the decision to move to Washington, D.C., didn't have a lot of resources and needed to figure out a way to get me and my belongings and my motorcycle to Washington, D.C. The motorcycle was the sticking point. And I was looking, I was researching like freight options on everything, and I was doing the math, and it was going to be cheaper to just ride the motorcycle across the country. Like gas and lodging was going to be cheaper than shipping it. So I drove, and so I knew enough people across the country that I could sort of do this like up and down, like not, it's not a straight shot, right? But I could get my way across the country, staying at people's places. And
The listeners are missing out on the zigzag motion that you're making with your hand. I think it's imperative to the story.
It is. It is a north-south zigzag. So I started in Sacramento. I came down here to Vegas, then Salt Lake City, Denver, Iowa, St. Louis, and then I think from St. Louis, I think I went all the way to D.C. But I do remember, and I only bring that up because I'm not familiar with the SoCal to Vegas, but I do remember coming down from Sacramento and coming across to Vegas, and it was quite boring, especially on a motorcycle when you don't have any like radio or anything to, like.
So were you like pulling stuff with a motorcycle? Like, I don't understand
So I had a tail bag full of stuff that was sitting on the back seat of my motorcycle, and I had a backpack full of stuff. And then my girlfriend, who was also moving to DC, was then going to drive her vehicle that was going to pack more stuff. So I didn't have a lot of effects at the time. Like I had just gotten done living overseas for 3 years. I didn't have a lot of stuff. That's how we did that.
Huh.
Yeah. And so I get in town and I go to have dinner with Gil Alexander, right?
Didn't know you knew him.
Yeah. So I stayed with a Marine friend of mine who happened to live here. But I hit up Gil and he was available for dinner. So I went and got dinner. I told him what I was doing. I was like, yeah, I'm riding a motorcycle across the country. He looks at me, he's like, is that safe? that was his only response. I was like, is that safe?
Short answer, no.
Short answer is no, it was not safe. Especially when my battery died and I was pop starting my motorcycle for about 300 miles to I do know Gil Alexander.
Yeah, I don't know what any of those words relative to your motorcycle mean, but I don't think it, yeah.
So anyway, we're leaving Sunday morning.
Very well. You guys talk about it more as of recently, but you and Dr. Mike are into sports betting.
Yes. So Mike has been handling all of the football because he really follows football, college and pro. And I've been doing everything else, just really looking at numbers and not in a terribly intelligent way, but I'm not following the sports so much as just looking at the betting trends. Yep. So we've been doing that, yeah.
That is, obviously everybody likes to make fun of me for my tiddlywinks action that I like to get down. People ask me, how do you keep track of so many leagues? I don't. I have resources that I refer to on win probabilities and stats and stuff like that. I don't have to know anything about the team if I have the right numbers in front of me and know what the personnel. By the way, I think it was a week or two ago, Pittsburgh was playing somebody, I think, on Monday night or on some primetime game. And I don't look at player props until a couple hours before, because that's when like the big full set of them are available. But I checked the night before, and there was some first to score a touchdown props available. Vance McDonald was 20-1, which was amazing because he has the most red zone targets for the Steelers. So I went ahead and put some action on him. Did not do the due diligence to make sure that he was not questionable for the game. And sure enough, he was inactive. So I ate that bet. Learn from my mistakes and check the roster. Well, very good. Just want to do a little pre-summits chit-chat. This is my first...
That's right. This is your first sort of with this group.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I was talking to Eric about that on the way. Eric and I happened to land around the same time, caught a ride together over here, and I was like, I'm eager, the Gamblepalooza, that crew, right? That was my first event. Gamblepalooza was my first event. Then I did Vegas Vacation. That was that subset of people. And this is my first time with this this group.
And I guess the difference is, and I think Eric, you talked about it too on your show, was that there's certainly gamblers here, but this is more of a Vegas centric group. So you might, there might be more emphasis on lodging and drinking and dining and that kind of thing. I think you'll definitely get a sense of that when you're, you know, talking to people during the event. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was in today's episode that someone mentioned craps dealers, and you reiterated, like, because rules don't really vary that much from table to table. It is the experience at the table in which you gauge where you want to play. Golden Gate has a great reputation.
Yeah, we've had very good experiences there. Yep.
Yep. Where else in Vegas stick out for you? What are the top few that you remember having a solid crew?
You know,
Harris, I think you've mentioned a number.
Yeah,
of
and it, we were talking about that on the drive in today. Planet Hollywood. We seem to always have good experiences at Planet Hollywood, so we're looking forward to playing there. You know, Downtown Grand here too. We've had some pretty good experiences with as far as crews go. Those are the ones that kind of stick out. You know, we used to say Cromwell, but now the Cromwell we've kind of had hit or miss lately. So, not really sure. But those are the ones definitely.
Do you still play poker at all? Do you play any live poker when you're out this way?
I don't play a lot of casino poker anymore. No, okay. I used to do quite a bit. So the only poker play really I'm doing now is home games. Sometimes home tournament. I try to get we used to have a weekly home game. We've been struggling to keep it together just because people have not been available. People have moved away. But I still love poker, and I like talking about poker, and I love playing it. But it's pretty much home games now.
So when you recorded the episode that just came out today, October 10th.
Yeah.
You were talking about the poker scandal.
Mm-hmm, with Mike Postle, yep.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I don't know what information was out at that time, but now that you've seen more come out, what is your reaction to what's been uncovered?
Well, it's one of those things where, as far as I'm concerned, he's clearly guilty of cheating, and it's just a matter now of getting into the specifics of how he did it, because the evidence is just too overwhelming. It might all be circumstantial, but it is so overwhelmingly pointing to him having really cheated, and I think the poker community feels that way too. So it's just a matter of what exactly did he do? What were the specifics?
Have you ever been at a table where either home game or otherwise, where you suspected that someone is up to no good?
Not personally, but in this weekly home game that I'm a part of, actually started back in the late 80s, and I wasn't a part of it at that time, but they had a guy that they did catch cheating. He was stacking the deck in such a way that he would get a hand, and they kicked him out. So that's the only thing, I guess, that I've been close to. I'm trying to think specifically of other incidents. I can't really think, no.
Have you? You've been in a poker game where you suspect someone, that there's some foul play involved?
Not in a poker game. We've played board games for money, and I've definitely caught people cheating.
What board games are you playing for money?
Risk.
Really?
Really.
You play Risk for money?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Settlers of Catan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna get the action down on Settlers of Catan.
Come up to New Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get you in.
Okay. Okay.
That's no problem.
All right.
But yeah, we definitely caught people doing. Yeah.
And back in the 90s, when Mike and I were playing almost exclusively Paigao poker at the tribal casinos, this was before they were full-blown casinos, and you were playing Paigao poker against other players who were acting as the bank. I don't know that we actually caught specific cheating, but we had to have been cheated along the way based on how much or how little oversight there was on the part of the casino, because the casino, they didn't really care what the outcome of the game was. They were just taking the ante, the rake, that they were charging for people sitting there, and there was just so much going on, that was unregulated. I'm sure we were cheated along the way there somehow.
Yeah,
it's just a feeling more than specifics.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking to Jonathan Jossel tomorrow morning. I'm curious if. What sorts of questions would you have for someone who's running a casino on their relationship with gamblers?
Good question. Well, since we're kind of coming off cheating in poker, do they have a poker room at
Not Plaza? Anymore. No, they did don't. Away with
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'm always interested in how they treat advantage players or who they suspect of as advantage players. And they, I think maybe even Vince on Vegas Confessions, you were talking about that a little bit, because I feel very strongly that, you know, there are cheaters, there are people who really are out there cheating, and then there are people who are just taking advantage of a game that they have an edge over, like card counting, or like hole carding, or any other number of things that, you know, I don't even know about. So I'm always curious to hear them say, hey, what do you think of advantage players? How do you treat them? What do you think of, maybe even specifically, what do you think of card counters? Because my feeling has always been, let the card counters count cards.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's hurting casinos as much as they think it is. And I think there are plenty of counters out there who think they're a lot better than they
Absolutely.
Are.
Right.
And I think casinos are real quick to back players off. They've even talked about this on Gambling with an Edge. Richard Munchkin has said many times, if you're winning, sometimes they'll trespass you. Even just because you're winning, maybe you had a big run at the craps table, or and they just they don't like that, and they'll back you off. So yeah, I guess that. I don't know if I answered your question, but
I don't know if he did either.
Yeah, I understand that it's a business, and I'm not an advantage player, but I think casinos should allow advantage players to play. Obviously, if it's getting out of hand, I can understand, but. I don't know. Maybe I'm contradicting myself, but I just wish that casinos weren't overly paranoid about advantage play.
Yeah.
And maybe they aren't. I don't know.
I know people that make a very, very good living off of casinos, and it's various types of advantage play. I don't have the skills that they have. I couldn't make a living doing this. But some of them do exceptionally well, and at a smaller place, I would imagine it would move the needle on the bottom line.
That's for sure.
So I can respect the fact that they're trying to protect their financials. And
one thing I really enjoy about Gambling with an Edge is when they have a card counter on, and Richard always asks them, "What was your longest losing?" losing streak or long most hours in a losing however he phrases that question because some of the I get how the math works. I get how it's an advantage. I understand people that put that into practice. I don't know if I could go 50-60 hours of losing and still feel confident that I'm doing this right.
Well, and the streaks go longer than that. He's talked about 300 hours.
Yeah, right. Sure.
You know,
right.
Counting cards and that's rough. That is psychologically would be extremely hard. It's certainly not something I would be able to handle.
You'd have to be so confident in not only what you're doing, but the numbers behind it to know that if I just keep on doing this, it should, you know, the ship should right itself.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things where the math is done.
Right.
Right? Like, it really... There are a lot of plays out there where if it's not working in your favor, you have to question the math. And you have to question whether or not you're doing it accurately. This isn't one of those things.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Like, it's a known.
Yeah.
Right? So the question could be, you know, are you actually performing at a high level?
Right.
Right? But you're not questioning the math. You're not questioning the right play.
Right. Yeah. That's why it's important if you are a card counter, you want to be a card counter, you can't do it alone. You need somebody to, well, first of all, for moral support, if you have one of those long streaks, or to check how well you're doing. You know, are you making mistakes in the count along the way?
Yeah. Yep.
You need somebody to double check.
Yeah. Very well. We all have things to do and places to go, so.
I haven't made a bet yet. I'm starting to get ill.
Well, you came downtown, so you got your first gamble in.
That's true.
I
drove myself.
Let's look at what I'm about to tell you through the most superstitious of lenses.
Okay.
Okay.
I made two prop bets just before. I might have even done it during my flight. And both of them lost while I was in the Las Vegas airport. The game, the Patriots-Giants game, had ended, and I did not hit either of them. Good omen on got it out the way before I actually hit the casino floor, or bad omen, the trip is starting with a loss?
No, good omen. Okay. Yeah, get the loss out of the way.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you win right away, that's a guarantee that you're going to be a loser for the trip.
Sure.
That's true of a poker session. You win like the first hand of the night, well, I'm going to be a loser overall then.
Yeah.
You don't want to win those first bets, yeah.
I did. So I'm sure you're aware the above average effect, right? The idea that in a group of people, that more people than the average allows will believe that they are above average, mm-hmm. at that particular. Driving is a really great example.
Yeah, but sure, yeah, yeah.
Right, everybody thinks they're a good driver. What aspect of the gambling community do you feel like the above average effect is the most true? Examples would be sports betting, poker players, card counters.
I think blackjack play in general.
I absolutely agree.
It does need to be card counters.
I can't. Every time we talk about stubborn blackjack players, I just keep on thinking of that guy in Kansas who's like, "I've been playing for 20 years. You never hit on an 18." I'm not even playing a wrong for 20 years. I'm sorry to tell you. But yeah, I think you're right, because even when it's clear they have no clue, I'll hear people tell me stories about their time at the blackjack table, because they'll find out that I'm a player. They're like, "Oh yeah, I was at the blackjack table, and the guy on third base, did," and I'm just like, "You have no idea how wrong you are and what you're." Yeah.
Here's what I've learned, especially at a blackjack table, more than any other game. When something is off, it doesn't mean the guy doesn't know what he's doing, or the gal doesn't know what she's doing.
Sure.
There's more things going on than I ever imagined in the casino at a blackjack table, where you think you're helping somebody and they just wish you would shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's still people out there that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. But you're right. I mean... years ago, I probably would have lended unsolicited advice at a blackjack table, and now
now you know to mind your business.
Now I know to mind my business. Yeah.
I find it hard to hold my tongue, because that's just kind of my personality. But yeah, I force myself to not say anything.
To the point where if someone asks, I simply say what the book. Like when someone's like, "Should I hit this?" I simply say, "The book." Would say
the book says, yeah,
you should.
That's
do
how
this.
I answer,
right?
Too.
Like, I don't say,
"Well, the book says you hit."
Yeah, I try not to like say, "Yes, you should hit that."
Right,
like this is the best information I can give you. I still want you to make the decision,
because then if it turns out badly, you blame the book.
It's Hoyle's fault, right?
Not yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. My favorite was the blackjack dealer in Foxwoods that was telling us. Four was the most busted up card.
Yeah, and you're wondering. So is he trying to be funny, or does he really believe it? Yeah.
It was bizarre. Anyhow, gentlemen, thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks. Let's have fun.
We have plenty of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Appreciate your time, by
Absolutely.
The way. I know that your time is valuable, so I appreciate you carving a little bit out for me.
My pleasure.
I'm curious to hear, as gamblers, we're fascinated with the industry, right? With the, a lot of uninformed gamblers will think that it's house versus the gambler. Informed gamblers know that it's all just one big math problem going on down in there, and it's a relationship between gambler and casino, right? And so we kind of want to explore the latter part of that. I'm curious, gambler and non-gambler aside, how do you describe the customer at Plaza? Like, who, when you have to describe, if you described an avatar to me on who Plaza's customer is, what would they look like?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me. Very happy to be on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
I would say the customer actually varies quite heavily, differently in the sense of it just depends on what we got going on. So last week, or this week just finished, we had Super Bingo. Super Bingo attracts 950 bingo players. Typically that customer is a little older, maybe 60 plus, skews to being more female, a lot of out of town people. So that's kind of our best demographic for the casino, because it's a truly casino-based customer. Whereas the week before, you might have had a festival like Life is Beautiful, and now your customers are 20-year-old kids that have come to listen to electronic dance music, mm-hmm. and really aren't a casino customer. So it just depends on what's going on in town, depends how we're programming it. But our core customer that fills the casino on a regular basis, I would say, is a 45 to 60-year-old player from the Midwest, and the drive market is really sort of the sweet spot for us. But you got to imagine, we have 1,000 rooms here, and to fill the hotel on a daily basis, you're taking rooms, you're taking customers from all over the world,
sure,
and all ages and all demographics, and you really can't judge anyone because you never know.
Yeah,
someone could walk in and look like they're not going to play much and suddenly be a great player.
Yeah,
so it really does vary.
Of course. So how, like, that bingo hall, I've not been to the bingo hall yet, but I've heard people who've been there, seen pictures, I see it talked about on your social media often. How did you know to invest in that? How did you know that bingo was going to be an attraction for the plaza?
So it's a two-part answer to that. One is you have to, in this business, differentiate, and you have to be able to offer people something that everyone else isn't. We're the only ones who had bingo in downtown. I think a few people tried it a couple of years ago and failed with it, and our room has just remained steady. And fortunately for us, we have a wonderful bingo manager who had 30 years of experience, who joined us about 4 years ago, and he's taken the room to the next level. It's unbelievable what's happened. So we now do 6 Super Bingo tournaments every year. The only ones who really compete with us on that scale is South Point and to a lesser degree, I'd say the Boyd properties and the Station properties, but we're the only ones downtown that offer it. And I knew it was something that we could have a unique edge on, because we're the only ones who were offering it. So for us to see the growth there told me, let's double down on bingo, which maybe some people thought was crazy. For us, it's turned out to be a brilliant move, and it's been very, very profitable for us. I think the second part of it, which is also relevant to the entire conversation we're having here, is there's a theory in our industry that, you know, the slot machines and table games are the effect. They're not the cause. The cause is everything that you're doing. This is not me, Jonathan, who came up with this. This is a industry-wide theory. I think actually if you watch YouTube, you'll see Steve Wynn talking about it. You have to create a reason for people to come. And bingo gives us a huge audience of, not when we're doing Super Bingo, but just on a daily basis. Every session will have 50, 60 to 100 people coming into our session. And when that session's over, they're going to go and play slots, they're going to go and play table games, and they're going to go and gamble on other things. So it's really another amenity that offers us more foot traffic and more people.
So you have to be able to attract, you have to be able to differentiate. But customers, gamblers or non-gamblers, but especially gamblers, have certain things either expect or they're hoping for. So tell me about, bingo's a great example on how you're differentiating. Mm-hmm. How do you balance then making sure you're delivering on what people are expecting? You know, like they see X, Y, or Z at the other dozen casinos in town, they expect to see it here. How do you balance that, you know, between innovation and being reliable on consistency in the industry?
Well, I think I understand the question, and the way I think I understand what you're trying to get at here.
It's okay. I can try asking it again.
Sure. Maybe I don't answer the wrong question.
So maybe provide me an example of where you saw something that's working elsewhere, and you know you had to bring it here. Okay. I guess that's what I'm. So bingo, you invest in bingo because that's not offered somewhere. Give us an example then of you see something working out either in downtown or out on the strip, whatever, you're like, you know what, that's working there, I think it works here.
Well, actually, one of the things we're about to undertake is single zero roulette.
Okay.
We're going to be the only ones in downtown who offer the game single zero roulette at not low stakes, but at lower stakes than anyone is currently doing it on the Strip as well. And it's something that I've
Tuesday morning at 9:30, what's the low stakes on that?
10, you know, 15? Well, so let's say, when you say that though, people get confused. I want to be clear.
Sure.
$10, is that total spread across all the numbers, or is that per number?
The minimum inside.
Minimum inside on everything.
Yeah.
I think $10 would be very reasonable.
I think that's very reasonable for
I think five's too low, $10 seems very reasonable
to me. Absolutely.
That's probably where we're going to be.
Okay.
So we're going to be the only ones offering that. I've seen that coming from England. That's all you play, a single zero.
Yeah.
No one would even know what that double zero nonsense is. You come here and everyone, and people just go, triple zero is ridiculous. But, you know, a lot of people don't know the difference. And I've seen single zero roulette in England, and it obviously works there. So I'm going to make that work for us over here. But I think the bigger thing that to cover here is, my favorite thing is to walk through the casino, see someone on a slot machine holding a drink, and they don't know they're doing it, but they're singing along to the song in the background, in the music, in the casino. And to me, that's a sign of somebody who's relaxed, having a good time, drinking, playing. It's all those elements that you can't really put your finger on it, but it's what keeps people in the casino longer and having a good time.
Sure.
And to me, that's the most important thing. It's that ambience you create in the casino. Everyone has the same slot machines. Everyone has the same table games, although not everyone has single zero roulette. But not everybody has the same customer service. Not everybody has the same ambience, the same environment, and that's something that we really want to touch on. You want the great mayor? Look at this, Mr. Mayor.
How you doing, sir?
We're doing a podcast here.
I just wanted to listen to him.
Okay.
This is a pro.
That's true.
He's a pro. He's got all the right lines down.
Didn't even practice.
Always tells the truth. No hyperbole with this guy.
Do
you know the mayor?
I don't.
Oscar Goodman.
Hi, Oscar Goodman. How are you?
Sir, it's a pleasure. Tim Lawson.
Former mayor. Nice seeing you. What's your podcast?
It's called The Better Life. It's a podcast for recreational gamblers.
From Las Vegas?
No, I'm from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Yeah, in town for a community meetup, and then I'll be at G2E next year, next week. Yep.
Good. Okay, well, don't let me interrupt.
He said that you always tell the truth, so I'm going to get asked this question now,
sure.
Then. What is your philosophy on card counters? How does Plaza respond if they have evidence? And there's no judgment here, but this is merely curiosity.
It's a good question because it happens a lot. It depends. For the most part, obviously you realize there's a database of known card counters.
Sure.
Those guys, we don't take their action.
Right.
But if it's a guy who we come in and he's following the count and he's not, it's really, the bigger question isn't the counting, it's to what degree they're fluctuating their bets.
Yeah.
My philosophy, and that's always been, look, tell them whatever they bet, that's their new minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, they won't stay.
Oh, I see.
But if you tell them that, that seems fair to me.
Yeah.
So if you bet $25, you now can't go below 25.
Yeah.
If you go to 100, you now can't go below 100. You know what I mean? So now that it eliminates the need to fluctuate the bet. But it really isn't something that I spend a lot of time on.
Sure.
It isn't that frequent. Our surveillance department typically handles it.
Yeah.
And Table Games makes that call. It isn't a big... A big area. It happens a lot, but it's not something that I think we experience a tremendous amount. We don't have the limits that some of the other places have that probably attract the bigger card counters.
Sure. I think it's interesting that you're a lot of places will try to cap a counter. I think it's interesting that you almost take the other approach of like, okay, if you want to bet that much, that's your new minimum.
Yeah, and but we don't even enforce it at the table games downstairs anymore, just because it's like I said, they're not interested. They just walk away at that point.
Yeah.
It's never been something that I've seen them be like, oh, okay, great, we'll do that.
Sure. So then let's talk a little bit more about your philosophy on gamblers, right? Obviously, you want people in here, you want them to play. Looking into your comp systems, your promotion systems, that sort of stuff, what has been Plaza's philosophy on attracting and maintaining gamblers?
So real easy. I want it to be fair. I want it to be good. I want it to be good value, I should say. But here's the truth. Here's the biggest part for me. I don't want people that are here because they're addicted to the deal. I don't want them only to be here because they want the best free play, they want the best points, they want the best pay tables. That's important and it has to be competitive. But you want people that are here because they like the place, they like the people, they have a good time. If you're just attracting people that are here because of the deal, guess what? The minute somebody else offers them a different deal, they're out the door.
Sure.
The minute you change anything, they're out the door. So you got to be competitive. You got to have, I think we have the best pay tables in downtown, I would say, on video poker. But again, if they're only here because they're addicted to, not addicted, but because they love the offers, well, then somebody could easily take that business from you. You want people that are here because that's all good and competitive and fair, but they're having a good time there, they're being taken care of. They can text me and say, let's have a drink. They can call the host and somebody takes good care of them. That's what I want people to come here for. And I think we're trying to find that balance, getting away from finding people that are just here because they want too good of a deal.
Okay. You're talking about people who come in here just for the deal.
Yeah.
How do you, if you know you have a customer who's only frequenting Plaza when the deal's there, when the promotion's right, do you respond to them any differently than you would other customers? Like, do you adjust any compensation, any sort of...
No, I try not to do things on one-off basis.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But if someone shows a pattern of behavior, like over the past 2 years, this guy's only coming in when the slot point multiplier is right or something like that.
Sure, we'll adjust then.
Okay. Because
they're not our core customer. They're not someone who's saying, I want to go to the Plaza to have a good time. I want to be there long term. They're just there for the deal, like I said. And they'll disappear the next day as soon as somebody else has a different point multiplier, or as soon as somebody else has a different promotion that they're running. So you'll see them in and out now and then, but it's not something that we spend a lot of time on either. It's definitely part of the industry, but we've learned some lessons here. I did a promotion a couple of years ago where we offered on a taxable jackpot. It was tax day, April 15, and we did a promotion where we would pay the tax for you if you hit a taxable. And I met everybody in the industry there. I met every guy that was a shop. And you know what they said to me? They said, Jonathan, we've never met, well, I don't want to say never. It was a 24-hour promotion. And everybody thought after the third hour, we'd just cancel the promotion because we were getting every guy in there going crazy on these machines.
You held it the whole way through.
And I waited the 24 hours. I said, why did you do that? You're crazy. I said, because I told you I was going to do a 24-hour promotion. I did a 24-hour promotion. I'll lick my wounds. I learned some good lessons. Our team learned some lessons, and it was fun. It didn't end up being that bad. It was 4 years ago, and we're still here, and we're still growing, and it's wonderful.
Circa coming up next door.
Yep.
How does that benefit, and how does that impact the Plaza? It's Plaza, right? I keep on putting a the in front of it. Is it the Plaza?
Okay. The Plaza's good. The Plaza.
I can never remember if I'm supposed to put a the in front of it or not.
Well, we're sitting here looking at it. It looks beautiful out of the window here at Oscars.
Sure.
And it can only be good. I wish them well. I think it's going to be wonderful. My philosophy is anything around us that attracts more people and higher-end customers is a great thing for downtown. I've long believed that Main Street was going to be the best area in all of downtown. This only helps to solidify that. We have some very exciting ideas for our front of the Plaza, across the street from where Circa will be, to help elevate the experience on Main Street, to attract more people, to make this really the epicenter of downtown, which it really is becoming, because the Plaza sits between Circa, Fremont Street Experience, and then on the other side you have the Symphony Park that was the vision of our former great mayor, Oscar Goodman. And they're building over there 800 residential units. There's the Smith Center, there's the LuRuvo Center. So all these things put the Plaza in the absolute middle of everything in downtown Las Vegas, and where else would you want to be?
Yeah.
I think we're perfectly positioned, and I think that's going to be, that being Circa is going to be great for downtown, and be the best year in all of Las Vegas, in all of downtown's history once that opens as well.
How has Plaza strengthened or pivoted its brand identity during your tenure here?
Probably mostly at what I wanted when I became the licensee. I wanted to be known for offering a good experience, offering good value to people, and being consistent. I think a lot of issues with these casinos, especially back in a few years ago, was the inconsistency. You gotta imagine somebody comes here once a year. They wanna see the same faces, they wanna see the same promotions, they wanna see the same slot machines. Every single few months you're just starting fresh. It doesn't work. So consistency was really important to our brand. But then we've added so many new additions to the property, including, you know, the whole new casino layout, new carpet, new convention floor, the new pool deck. Oscar's Steakhouse has really grown. And we're adding new identity with the new arena outside by having different types of events. So it's really in programming. We've added the new comedy club now. By adding all these new amenities, it does give us a different audience that's starting to come down here as well.
Yeah. Do you gamble? You're just asking for some sports picks, so there's some evidence there. But like,
would...
Yes, I gamble.
Okay.
I have a long history of gambling. In England, I gambled a lot in the bookies, on the high street bookies.
Okay.
I used to bet on the greyhounds. I love greyhound betting.
Okay.
Racing. Here, I have, to a degree, run out of patience for table games. I like it.
Sure.
But I don't have the patience to sit and play. And if you want to have a good run, you need to be able to sit down and take the patience. But I absolutely love sports betting.
Okay.
I love sports betting. And the mayor is my partner in a lot of our sports bets. And I enjoy it. What can I say? It's not a bad habit. It's a vice. It's a vice, but it's something that I consider to be my hobby. It's fun.
Sure.
It's fun. It's not dangerous. But yes, I gamble.
So I'm curious about the to go back to the single zero roulette.
Yes.
What would keep you from not taking it in? Are you absolutely getting it in and figuring?
Oh yeah, yeah, no.
Okay.
100%.
100%.
It's happening November 1. Subject to the arrival of the actual table, but November 1 is the tentative scheduled date, and absolutely nothing's going to stop me from doing it.
Okay, okay. So I misunderstood. I thought you were still
considering it. I've ordered the table. I've ordered the wheel. You know, it's funny. The dealers have to learn how to deal it. It's slightly different for them. But other than that, we're full steam ahead. It's going to be great.
It's going to have French rules or no?
No.
No?
I don't think people even understand the French rules. Doesn't seem to me like it's that interesting. The neighbors' bets, I don't think people know what they're looking at. It's going to just be a standardized single zero roulette.
I would bet the orphans if it was available.
No, no. I couldn't even find that table, to be honest with you. I didn't
really?
Look. And then you really got to remember, it's going in our party pit, so it's going to be some of the girls dealing
sure.
it. Trying to explain to them that element of it is like a whole new training.
Yeah.
So we're trying to keep it fairly simple and easy to understand. And what I think will be interesting is to see, you know, I go to the Golden Nugget, they got triple zero roulette, and the table's packed.
Yeah.
It might turn out that not that many people really want single zero roulette. We'll see how it goes.
I'm interested to see if that you get a draw there. Just for the same reason you just said, people are flooding the triple zero roulette table and just don't seem really to care.
Yeah.
You know, Cromwell was getting props for so many years on their tables and what their mm-hmm. rules are, but their single zero roulette table still was not as frequented as I thought one might be. But I think that might have to do more with minimums than it does with the game itself.
Okay.
I think at your dollar amount, I think you're going to see some action.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Don't hold me accountable if that's...
Yeah, yeah. Well... Nothing is given in this town. You try everything and see what works.
So, I mean, you mentioned consistency is important. You want people, when they come back here a year later, to see some familiar faces, stuff
Absolutely.
Like that. With this town being an industry town, what challenges have you had? Have you had any challenges, I guess, is the question, with retention and recruiting at any part of your employment staff?
I don't think anything out of the ordinary. I mean, when you have 700 team members, you're going to have turnover, you're going to have recruitment challenges, but nothing out of the ordinary. We have a good core team here.
Yeah.
We have some really long tenured people. We just threw a retirement party for a lady that's been here 33 years.
I saw that.
And she's the kind of people that I talk about as they don't make them like that anymore. It's tough to find that kind of loyalty and that kind of passion for a place, but I'm trying to build that with the new team members, and hopefully it works out.
Is there anything about the Plaza that's coming soon, later, currently? Here's your opportunity to tell anybody who maybe be hearing about the Plaza the first time right now why they should be considering the Plaza when booking their stay in Las Vegas.
Well, we just remodeled 120 brand new rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Are you staying in
one of them? I am in one of them.
How is it?
I enjoy it.
Okay.
Yes.
So we just redid the rooms, and I find the feedback so far has been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this new thing where every Thursday and Friday we do a happy hour for our hotel guests. Free drinks, four to five, sip.
Yeah.
And I encourage everyone to be there because I go there. And I had a lady reach out to me on Twitter who said, I'd love to meet you. So come to SIP, meet all of our team.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to build this culture of you can meet myself, you can meet our vice president of the hotel. All of us are there, and it's turning into more of a family business where people actually can interact with real people. And that is important because people want personal touch, people want those experiences. And then in terms of the actual property, I think when we announce our plans for underneath the dome and to our north across from Circa, I think that's going to be really exciting for downtown and for the property. and come down, have a drink at Oscars, meet the mayor, go to a comedy show. What could be better?
What could
and
be
play
better?
Single Zero Roulette.
I'm looking forward to the Single Zero Roulette.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for your time. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It. So fun fact about that interview with Jonathan Jossel, a few minutes in, as you can hear, Oscar Goodman arrives and hangs out in a booth behind me to listen to the interview. Super flattered that he hung out and listened. Both of those interviews were recorded with lav mics, which is why the audio isn't as direct as we normally enjoy, but I had to pack light, so everybody's just wearing lav mics in those interviews. Excited about the rest of the week. You can follow me on Twitter at The Better Life. More importantly, you can follow me on Instagram at The Better Life, where I am posting. I'm tweeting plenty from G2E, but I'm posting even more on Instagram stories, and so that'll be where the high volume stuff is. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show. I will likely drop some audio in there from the week that doesn't make it into the feed, and then TheBetterLife.us/merch is where you can cop some shirts. The I Drink and I Throw Things shirt inventory has been updated, so check that out. Use promo code YO11 for 11% off of your purchase. I appreciate everybody's support. Summit-specific content will be next week. Plaza-specific content will be next week, outside of course, the interview that you just heard. But my thoughts about the Plaza, my experience with the host, my experience with the Plaza, our experience throughout the week, all of that will be discussed next week. Today and the next few days are the audio grabs that I'm getting from the event. So on behalf of Eric Rosenthal, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.